Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Nice show today. As we get closer and closer to the Smack Off, you want to take your shot at a golden ticket. You want to get in on the action. Here's a guy who knows how it's done. Chael Sonnen. Chael has won this thing twice. He came in. He talked about his fight this weekend, but most of all, he came in to talk about July 28th. He came in to talk about his process and how he plans to make a huge return for Smack Off 23. You do not want to miss Chael. Plus, Adrian Wojnarowski joined us. He is the editor of The Vertical. He broke down a wild week in the association. And on top of that, Kansas City Royals first baseman, all class, Eric Hosmer made a jungle run too. So we had an excellent day. Here is the very best of the best. Alvy, go ahead and give it to him. Sonnen v. Silva, Saturday, live from Madison Square Garden. It's on pay-per-view, 10 p.m. Eastern. Chael, welcome back to the jungle. Chael, what's up? How are you?
Well, I think this is where we hang up since you just got everything out there that I called in for. Thanks, Jim. What's going on, man?
Exactly. I'm doing great. Chael, how about you? How are things?
Man, I'm pumped. All I want to do is talk about the Smack Off. I know I've got to get into Vanderlei Silva, but July 28th cannot get here soon enough. I'm telling you, I've told you this before, but I am coming in so hot. I am prepared for it to be my last time I'm ever invited, and I'm not kidding about that. I came in eighth last year. I'm still pissed off about it, and I came in late. I came in low because I was too nice, and I will not make that mistake again.
Chael Sonnen obviously has gone to school on what happened last year. But, Chael, why would this be the last time ever? I mean, are you talking about winning it, walking off, and never coming back?
Oh, no. I'm talking about coming in so hot that you say, Chael, you're no longer welcome. I'm not leaving anything on the table. I made a huge mistake last time. I tried to tell a story. I tried to get creative. I got destroyed. I've never disagreed with losing the Smack Off. I really feel that the right winner gets crowned every year. It wasn't me, but it wasn't me because I had the wrong plan. I can't believe I went that route. I will not do it again. I am coming hot right out of the gate.
All right, so one more thought, Chael. Are you looking to win it, or are you looking to just come in and burn the house down?
Oh, no, I'm always looking to win it, man. It takes a full year. You don't understand. I don't know how you don't understand when you're the host this back how serious business this is. This is 365 days of preparation. You get 2 minutes. You got to come the right way without getting dropped and without losing points. Mike and I go back and forth all year long, jotting notes down, making preparations for this. I know I'm not looking to come in and walk away. I'm just not leaving anything on the table.
You know, what's amazing to me?
I was too nice last year. I was too nice, and I'm still mad about it.
Chael Sonnen joining us. You know, what's the most amazing thing to me, Chael, is you're actually kind of letting us in on the process. You're describing the process. I mean, I'll push my luck. What's the process? How can you work an entire year on your Smack Off call? Take us inside the process.
Okay, so that's the thing. There's so many things that go into this. There's so many intangibles. I mean, first off, there's no hi, hello to Jim. Second off, we know what happens historically to people that want to come on and sing and do poems to get fancy like that. The third thing, you have to show everybody that you listen every single day. However, if you bring up something that's too dated, you're going to lose points for that. So you plan the whole year. You've got to drop a couple of nuggets, but you also have to make sure the last 72 to 96 hours is what's the most relevant. And then you've got the intangibles. We've seen it over the last couple of years where guys are going to shticks, from what Mike and I pulled to what Left pulled that was absolutely genius, to what Mark pulled. And then Brad showed us all that the bottom line basics is still what works. It's simply the best call. You can get all the helicopters and all the periscopes that you want. It's the best call is going to get his hand raised. It's really tough. I'm telling you, Jim. It's really, really tough to win the Smack Off.
It's really hard. He knows of what he speaks. He's won the thing twice. Chael Sonnen, and that is the best kind of RSVP you could ever get. He's joining us once again. All right, Chael, great job. Now, you're fighting in New York City on Saturday. Is New York City ready for the Chael P. Sonnen experience?
Oh, it's disgusting out here. You should see this town. It's all decorated in concrete. They got this old decrepit building called the Garden. I'm from Westland, Oregon. Okay, if we had a building that old in Westland, we'd tear it down. It smells like mildew. It's disgusting. A rich man like me would not come here unless I had to.
Chael, I thought that Madison Square Garden was the mecca. I thought every great fighter ever wanted to be at MSG.
Isn't that shocking? I keep getting told that same thing. All I want to do at MSG is leave MSG.
All right, so I would ask you what it means to be fighting at MSG, but I think you just answered the question. Not a hell of a lot, right?
No, not a whole hell of a lot, but I mean, I do enjoy coming to New York, taking their money, and soon I will be leaving.
All right, so that's coming up on Saturday, Sonnen v.
Silva. You want to know why they charge $1 for a piece of pizza out here, Jim? Because what? It's only worth a dollar. In my hometown, $3.99. Okay, out here, 99 cents, and I feel like maybe I'm giving them a quarter or two too much.
Chael, I thought that unless something happens in New York City, it doesn't matter. I mean, isn't that the place to be? Isn't that the capital of the world? Isn't that the most important place ever, NYC?
I tell you, they love to perpetuate that. All I can see is concrete and hear horns honking.
Chael, my man, if you hate the place so much, why are you going there to fight?
You know, sometimes you have to. It's like my dad said, the guy that wants to make the money's got to hit the road sometimes. So I had to leave Westland, Oregon. Could you believe it? I deal with a guy like Vandalay Silva. He comes to my hometown doing and acting the way he does. I would bury him in my backyard. He would be straight piped out to the creek. I got to come to New York and put on a nice hat.
All right. So now you've declared that you are on a Legends ass-whipping tour, and now you have Silva. What do you remember, Chael, about the first time you met him?
You know, the first time I met him, we actually sparred together. I had no mouthpiece, and he's a very vicious guy, and I usually don't spar without a mouthpiece, but I was on the road in Las Vegas, and I left it in Oregon. There was nothing I could do, and so I told him. I showed him my mouth. I said, I have no mouthpiece, and he doesn't speak great English, and I just thought, oh, geez, I'm going to lose some teeth today. He was actually very nice. He did not throw any punches. He said, I understand, and he threw no punches at my face. I thought he was a decent guy.
And then,
the first time I met him, I thought he was the
okay,
guy.
The
that was
first
5 minutes
time.
Of my life, and then we kind of got off track.
All right, so I was going to say, that was fine. It got off to a good start, and things seemed to go pretty well, and then one day, you're in a van together in Texas for a bit, and he had a videographer with him, and then he turned on you and he starts to talk junk. What was that like, and what did you make of it?
Man, I thought it was bizarre. He was mumbling and he was grunting. I didn't understand the whole thing. He had this camera guy. We'd spent the whole day together. Everything was cool in the gang. And then he has this guy, hit the green button and start filming. And basically he tells me off, but he was just out of round on it because my beef was with Anderson Silva. It had nothing to do with him. And why he was inserting himself, I didn't understand, until the camera comes on and then he edits it and puts it out. And I just thought that it was lowbrow. It's like, look, if you want to do that or you're trying to get one up on me, let's just call Dana and get a contract and let's just fight. Everybody works with somebody in the office that if they could fight, they would. Everybody's on a job site with somebody. Listen to this show right now. If they could fight them, they would. Well, I happen to be in a business where we can. So you don't have to tell me off in a van with a videographer that you're going to edit and put out on the internet later. Let's just get in the cage and figure this out.
Well, and get paid for it. Now, when the two of you were on the Ultimate Fighter set in Brazil, he goes after you again, and the story goes that you ended up getting sucker punched by one of his coaches. Is that how that went, and what bothered you most about that?
Yeah, that's exactly how that went. Well, first off, it bothered me that he even wanted to tangle with me. I was not welcome in Brazil. I had to have a security team and ride around in an armored car. I mean, I was public enemy number one, and it's tough for us to relate to in America, but in Brazil, it's the number two sport of the entire country. Soccer's number one, MMA's number two, so everybody knows what's going on. So it was a pretty dangerous place to come in the first place. I'm outnumbered any which way you want to look at it, and then he decides to jump me. It's like Vandalay. Don't bully me. I'm the bad guy. You want to be the good guy. Go ahead and do that. But if you bully me, you're going to make me vulnerable. You're going to endear me to people, which is exactly what happened, which is not the way the script was supposed to go down. So it just irritated me from the jump. But then when we finally do have to fight, in front of my wife, by the way, which is really inappropriate, right? If his wife was around, no matter how much I don't like him.
You wouldn't have done it, right?
Jumps me in front of my wife, and then one of his coaches jumps in while I'm on the ground fighting him and starts hitting me in the back of the head with no glove on. And I just thought, man, this is a crime. This is a really violent situation. I don't understand why we're doing this.
Sonnen v. Silva, Saturday night, live from MSG, pay-per-view, Bellator NYC, 10 p.m. Eastern. All right, Chael, really quickly, I mentioned off the top, you've got a new book, The Four-Pack Revolution. It's coming out later this year. You've said there are three things in a diet book that have never been said until now. Number one, lower your expectations. Number two, failure is an option. And number three, it takes time. What made you write this book?
You know what? I'm just tired of the magazine. I'm tired of men everywhere, women too for that matter, thinking they've got to have a six-pack. Those things are Photoshopped. The only people with six-packs, Jim, are anorexics and drug addicts. That's not realistic. Let's bring back the four-pack. Set your bit lower. You should still be able to achieve and be proud of yourself. And by the way, it is Sonnen v. Silva this Saturday night, Bellator NYC. I appreciate you mentioning it, but more importantly, it's Sonnen versus the World, July 28th, and only in the jungle.
Chael, you're amazing. You're absolutely incredible. Chael, before you go, what do you make of Conor McGregor stepping into a boxing match with Floyd Mayweather? Everybody's got an opinion, but I want your opinion for the record here in the jungle.
Man, I fully love it. I think that it's awesome. Take the NBA championships. I'll use that by example because it just happened. We did get the game that we wanted. But so many times when you use a competitive architecture and you have a bracketed format, the brackets fall apart. Somebody gets upset. Somebody gets injured. You don't always get that big match that you want. We threw the rankings out on this one. The power of the pin is what made this fight. But this is the fight that us, the fans, want. We asked for this fight. Dana White was the last one to come to the table. He was resisting it from the jump. He finally said, listen, if this is what you guys want, I'll give it to you. It feels the fans to win one. I don't think that it's a competitive match, but I don't really care. Sometimes, Jim, I just want to have some fun, and this is going to be fun.
Clones, I need to get at you for just one moment about Stamps.com. Stamps.com saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package, using just my computer and printer, and the mailman picks it right up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com. We will help you decide the very best class of mail based on your needs. There is no need to lease an expensive postage meter. Don't do that. I use Stamps.com because I'm never going to the post office again, ever. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the very top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. You know, Tio, I see it the same way. I mean, I love Conor McGregor. I'm on record with that. I don't see how there's any chance he could possibly win this fight. I mean, can you make any argument? Now, I agree with you. It's a show. It's an event. It's a spectacle. I'll throw down. I want to see it. But can you make any legitimate argument that Conor can win that fight?
No, absolutely not. Look, you've got a guy who's never lost at professional boxing. He's taking on a guy who's never done professional boxing. You don't have to put on your Columbo rain jacket to see how this story ends. The story that I think they need to tell from a promotional standpoint is the entire integrity of the sport of boxing is on the line here. There is no other sport that you could take the best in the world versus even a great athlete, a world champion, but from some other sport that's never done it, and it's going to be competitive. Yeah, you know, the high schools throughout this country have dropped boxing. It's not because they think it's dangerous, because they don't think it's a real sport. The NCAA, on all levels in this country, do not have or contest boxing. The only body with any level of integrity that still says boxing is a sport is the International Olympic Committee. Now, that also happens to be the biggest committee. That's the validity that you want. But boxing is really not in a good position with participation recognition around the country. It's either a real sport or it's not. They keep telling us it is. Some people are even telling us it's a science. But those same people are now saying that a guy who's never done it has a chance to beat the greatest that we have. That's the story that's being told here. This fight had better be over and over quickly or boxing takes a hit. And I am a boxer. That doesn't come from the MMA guy in me. I'm a boxer. I love the sport. I do think it's real. But that's what this is about.
Joe, I've got 1 minute. July 28th is the day. You've won this thing twice. Now, the Smack Off is like anything else in business and in life. It changes, it evolves, it turns over. In your opinion, going forward, what wins that thing? Is it clone-on-clone crime? Is it sports takes? Is it comedy? Is it shtick? What wins the Smack Off going forward?
Yes. The answer is yes. Everything that you just mentioned, you've got to have a little bit of everything, and I really think that Brad taught us a lesson. It is the basics. It is a simple telephone with a good reception and a good, strong call. That's what's going to win. I love the shtick. I love where the Smack-Off has gone. I can just tell you, for me, I'm coming back to the basics, and I'm coming hot.
Best RSVP for a Smack-Off ever.
Kaboom.
The NBA playoffs may have been boring, but the NBA offseason has been anything but. Another day, another NBA bomb. And this time, it was Cavs chairman Dan Gilbert dropping that bomb and dropping the axe on GM David Griffin, regardless of what their statement says. This guy ran this guy off. Yesterday, he released a statement that read, and I quote, "The Cleveland Cavaliers and its general manager, David Griffin, have mutually decided not to extend David's current contract, which ends on June 30th, 2017. On behalf of the entire organization, I would like to thank Griff for his leadership and many contributions during his time here, including most recently his role in the franchise's first NBA championship. We have no announcement at this time related to new leadership of the Cavaliers basketball operations group,
but we are confident our current front office will continue to aggressively explore and pursue opportunities to improve our team in the weeks ahead. End of statement. You know, you'd think that bringing a world championship to Cleveland would have guaranteed David Griffin a gig for life. I mean, never mind a new contract, a gig for life. Apparently not. It got him exactly 12 more months because on the one-year anniversary of the day they won that first title in franchise history, Griffin is out the door. 3 years on the job, three trips to the finals, and the GM is out the door. Not just 3 years on the job and three trips to the finals and a championship, but he did it in Cleveland, and he's still out the door. Not only should he not have been one of the worst paid GMs, he should have been one of the best. You give this guy anything and everything he wants. If he wants part of the team, give it to him. If David Griffin said that he wanted to run with the team, you'd make him part of the starting five and have Kyrie come off the bench. I mean, come on, how do you not take care of this guy? And before you come in with your tired, LeBron is the real GM of the team. Man, save yourself the time. Better yet, save me the time. Check yourself. Yes, LeBron's got a ton of sway in that organization. Yes, LeBron helps to attract players. But LeBron was not the guy figuring out how to turn Dion Waiters and some spare parts into J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, and Timofey Mozgov, who all played huge roles in last year's championship. Just like LeBron is not the guy who figured out how to make a deal for Kyle Korver this year and save money in the process. He's not getting into the weeds of protected draft picks, cap space, and multi-team deals. David Griffin is practically the LeBron James of trade exceptions. From the moment LeBron announced that he was coming back, Griffin was rebuilding that roster on the fly, starting with that Kevin Love deal. Of the seven guys who played more than 19 minutes in Game 7 of the Finals last year, Griffin brought in four of them. So that's not building the plane you fly. That's ripping off the wings and the nose while it's still in the air. He's also the guy who had the stones to fire David Blatt when he was 30-11 and coming off a trip to the NBA Finals and replace him with Ty Lue, who only led that team to an NBA championship in his first season as head coach at any level. And you're going to fire that guy? Let that guy go? Mutually decide that he's not coming back? I mean, come on, what is this about? What's it really about? Is it about money? Griffin was making less than half of what most GMs make. If a guy helps you get to three straight finals and he wins you a title, and again, does it in Cleveland, maybe you chip this guy off a few extra bones. In fact, maybe you do everything in your power to keep him in that job. Maybe you give him a blank check and tell him to fill out his own amount. Not only should this guy have gotten a new deal, again, he should have had a gig for life, given what he did for that organization. Then again, the fact that no GM in Gilbert's time has ever received an extension tells you something. In fact, it tells you a hell of a lot. So, is Griffin leaving because they could not agree on the direction of the franchise? Maybe. That's been hinted at. But what could Griffin have been suggesting that was so radical or so crazy that Gilbert just could not keep him around? Really, what could that guy have said that was so at odds with the owner? I can't imagine. So, was it that Gilbert could bring in Chauncey Billups to play a role? Maybe. Hey, listen, I'm a huge Big Shot guy. Big Shot is a great leader. Big Shot is a really good analyst. And Big Shot's name has come up for some other gigs. But as much as I like Chauncey Billups, and I love the guy, he's got no experience on this level. And moving on from a title-winning GM for that is a huge roll of the dice, especially with LeBron entering a contract year and free agency being about 2 weeks off and the draft a couple of days away. Hey, look, maybe we'll find out. Maybe we won't. In the meantime, here's a thought. When you've gone to three straight finals, maybe you don't take a flamethrower to the place, especially when LeBron James can become a free agent next summer. Bottom line here, LeBron has changed. Gilbert obviously has not. And this dude once again is trying to fix what ain't broke. And in doing so, he risks breaking it all into a million pieces all over again. And if LeBron was looking for some cover or maybe a reason to leave once again, now he has it. Yeah, maybe Gilbert feels that LeBron won't bounce again. Maybe since he has his ring now, he doesn't care if LeBron does leave, which is probably a good thing, because what is clear is that LeBron's not content with just bringing that one world championship to Cleveland. He wants another ring or rings. And if he feels like there's a better opportunity to get it someplace else, he'll bounce again, because he already did what he set out to do when he returned to Cleveland. Gilbert is playing with fire here, and once again, he's on the verge of going pyro and burning his house down. Next time you want to make a move like that, Dan, check with your boss, LeBron, first. And that's the other thing. How do you make a move like that and not check with LeBron? How does LeBron not find out about it until we all do? So that's a monster take off the top. Cavalier fan, where do you come out? In Dan you trust? Do you think this guy's got this? Do you think he did the right thing? And again, what could Griffin have possibly have said that put him at odds with Gilbert? Guy knew exactly what he was doing. 1-800-636-8686. I've got that monster block right off the top, and then I've got thoughts on LeBron. Another monster take. Speaking of LeBron, he did tweet last night, quote, "If no one appreciated you, Griff, I did. And hopefully all the people of Cleveland. Thanks for what you did for the team for 3 years. We got us one trophy." End quote. Once again, if LeBron needed any cover or a reason to bounce, he now has it. Adrian Wojnarowski is my guest. Adrian, great to have you back. How are you?
Jim, great to be back. How are you?
My man, I'm so good. How's your life? I know you're busy this week. How are things going?
Doing great. Yeah, just a few things going on in the league today, that's for sure.
That's for sure. Why don't we start with the Cavaliers, Adrian? The Cavaliers and GM David Griffin, of course, part ways yesterday. Given what this guy's accomplished in his time there and the respect he's earned around the league, how do you explain how that went down?
It's baffling to everybody in the league. It's baffling to people within the Cleveland organization. What you've seen with Dan Gilbert is a pattern over time where he just loses, whether it's faith or interest, or he becomes curious about other people that he wants. It sort of has happened throughout his tenure of owning the Cavaliers, and especially at such a crucial time for this organization, with LeBron James facing LeBron James free agency next year, and in the summer where they're trying very hard to upgrade their roster, and with really limited avenues to do so, to let David Griffin go, and especially to let him go weeks after you wouldn't give me permission when there were general manager openings. He didn't get permission to go talk to Orlando. If you knew you were going to let him go, why wouldn't you let him go find another job? So that's also confusing to people. But, you know, as we reported, Chauncey Billups is his number one target, is Dan Gilbert's number one target to take over basketball operations. They're meeting today, and there's a real possibility there that if they can agree to a deal, Chauncey will take over the Cavaliers and will do so without, obviously, any front office experience. So he'd be able to conceivably hire a general manager who would be more, in tune with the day-to-day of the league. And so that's a risk, although Chauncey has all, I think, the makings of being a really good NBA executive. This is a tough entry-level job.
Yeah, you're putting him right in the fire. I love Chauncey. I think there's so much upside right there, and I could see whereby teams have talked to him, and he might actually be in that position at some point. But to be in that position with this team at this point, I mean, Adrian, what does LeBron make of all this?
Well, you saw his public comments on Twitter last night about, that, hey, I appreciated you, and if other people around here didn't appreciate you, David Griffin, I do. I think the fans do. He's been an advocate of David Griffin in his time there, but he's also been critical of him too at different times when he wanted some change on the roster, wanted upgrades. But at every turn, Griffin was able to upgrade, make deals, bring in players who made that team better. And again, this is the organization in Cleveland is very concerned about. They don't believe it's automatic that LeBron just stays when he's a free agent next year. That the fact that they won a championship already there, I believe, liberates LeBron to leave again, because he'll be able to say, I came back and did what I set out to do, which was to win a title here. And they believe that within the Cavaliers too. So they're, as an organization, trying to do everything they can to get him, to extend him next year. And a big part of that's going to be improvements to the roster. They've tried to be engaged, on Paul George. They've tried to be engaged on Jimmy Butler. They need third teams involved. Neither of those teams, if Indiana and Chicago are going to look toward rebuilds, which they are, in trading either of those players, Kevin Love doesn't appeal to them. And so they need a third team to take on Kevin Love. And that's what Cleveland literally had been doing, trying to do yesterday when Dave Griffin got the call and was let go.
Adrian, so let me ask you this then. I mean, Dan Gilbert's got to know this, right? He has to know that LeBron now has cover. If LeBron's looking for a reason to leave, he now gave him that reason. Gilbert has to know that, right? So does this mean he doesn't care if he leaves, or does he really not know?
Well, there's no question, Jim, he knows that. Listen, maybe in Dan Gilbert's mind, he's finding a way to upgrade on it. And again, I have tremendous respect for Chauncey. You know him. You've known him for years. I have. And I think, he has all the makings of a really good executive. But here's a guy in Dave Griffin who, we've been to three straight NBA finals, has made a couple of key deals to help, built a really good front office, really good assistant GMs in place there. And that's not usually something that you mess with in the middle of what is a championship run. They won a title last year, back to the finals, you know, in the third straight year. So there's tremendous risk involved here. And I think if Chauncey does take the job, if they come to an agreement here, who he hires as his general manager to help him along with the learning curve will be important.
The NBA draft is coming up on Thursday night. The Vertical is going to provide live coverage starting at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Woj is going to be all over that. All right, Adrian, what about the Pacers? They're trying to drum up a trade market for Paul George. What does the market look like right now? What could they reasonably expect to get in return?
That's what Indiana literally at this hour is trying still to gauge. And I think they're finding that. I think Indiana, and rightly so, they started off looking for a substantial return. And the way it was described to me was, you know, similar to like what Denver got for Carmelo Anthony, what Utah got for Deron Williams, when you think of players who were traded at the time, you know, of that caliber. But Indiana is not, because Paul George has made it clear he's going to go to the Lakers, he plans to go to the Lakers in 2018, because teams are being told he is a rental, he is not going to re-sign with you, well, they're all willing to give up much less than, let's say, Brooklyn or New York did when they thought they could re-sign those players. And so that has dulled the market. It's dulled the marketplace. There's two reasons I think the market's dulled on Paul George. Everybody wants him. Everybody would love to get him. But how much are you going to give up for a guy you're only going to have for 1 year? And then talking to a lot of executives, they think this too. If this was a year where you were a team and you thought, if we got Paul George, we could win the championship. We'll give up some assets, a bunch of them, because we think we could win with him. Because of who Golden State is, because of what they built, because of how dominant they are, the list of teams outside of Cleveland, really, I don't think there's a team out there who thinks, I'm going all in on Paul George because with him, we can beat the Warriors. No one really believes that. And so I think that's limiting the market also.
Right, so that's a really key point, though, Adrian, in the sense that if Cleveland is that team, and if the Lakers, would they think for a moment that Cleveland really would take that shot? For instance, if you're Magic Johnson and you're Rob Pelinka, what do you think? I mean, do you make a move for him right now to make sure Cleveland does not take that shot? Is there any kind of argument that it behooves them to bring him in right now to get him acclimated with the young players? In other words, if you're the Lakers, do you move right now or do you wait and just get him as a free agent a year later?
It is a question they're grappling with, Jim, and there's a lot of thought about them needing to try to get engaged with Indiana about this because, and you said it, let's say Paul George, hypothetically, and I'm not saying they're even interested. Let's say Boston did a deal for him, and I'm not saying they're even talking. You know, he'd go, let's say he went to Boston and they won the East and they got to the finals and they lost in six games to Golden State. And Paul, hey, I really like playing in Boston. I like playing for Brad Stevens. These fans are great. There's a history. What if all of a sudden he says, you know what? I was going to go to LA, but I kind of like it here. I'm going to resign. And the Lakers never get a player who, you know, was dying to come play for them. They have to allow for the fact that there could be a situation that Paul George could get traded to this summer, play a year, and become infatuated with that situation. Now, it's unlikely. I do think going back to L.A. is really important to him, and he wants to play for the Lakers. But the Lakers have to think about making some kind of an offer, and whatever it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be the number two pick. I don't think it's going to be Brandon Ingram. But they've got to look outside that and see if there's something they can offer Indiana that's better than the rest of the market. Because remember, Indiana's not dying to just give Paul George what he wants here. Like, they're going, if somebody has a better offer, Indiana's sending, I think Indiana sends them to the other place. But if the Lakers make the best offer, maybe they need to do that, because if the Lakers want to very much be involved with LeBron James next summer, and that's really hard to do if you don't already have Paul George, or you don't have Paul George coming in. If you're going to sell LeBron on the Lakers, you need to have a player the caliber of Paul George to be able to have that conversation with him.
The Vertical is going to provide live coverage of the NBA draft Thursday night starting at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Before you go, Adrian, you also tweeted this morning, quote, as teams become aware Phil Jackson isn't ruling out possibility of trading Kristaps Porzingis, frenzy of interest is growing today. End of tweet. Adrian, exactly what the hell is Phil Jackson doing now?
I reported Phil Jackson met with Lauri Markkanen from Arizona, who's a 7-foot jump-shooting big forward. Talented guy. He's not Kristaps Porzingis. Met with him Monday night in New York with the idea that if he traded Porzingis, he could take Markkanen number 8 to replace him. I reported a little more about it, that he is seriously weighing the possibility of trading Porzingis. And the outcry, the outrage among Knicks fans, as I expected, has been vocal today. It'll be interesting to see if there's pushback with ownership on that. But they have not been engaging teams, but it's absolutely, teams have been calling in the last 24 hours because they got wind of this. And then I reported on it this morning. But it's a real conversation that Phil Jackson, and it's a real thought that he is having. And that was part of the reason meeting with Markkanen last night. And this is a 21-year-old future star in the league who desperately wants to play for the Knicks, who wants it to work in New York. But the organization has not spoken to since the end of the season. Porzingis skipped his exit meeting, frustrated with the dysfunction there, went home to Latvia. He's been around Europe this summer working out. And the Knicks have done nothing to reach out and try to get the lines of communication open with him. This potentially could be a devastating decision for New York. The one thing Phil's gotten right in New York is drafting Porzingis. And the idea that he would move him this quickly is staggering to people around the league. And every team in the league is trying to get in on this.
So when the owner says, Phil, exactly what the hell are you doing? This is the one thing you've done right since you got here. Why would you entertain something like this? How did this come off the tracks, and why is Jackson doing it?
I don't know if it's compliance, if he wants a player who's more compliant to him. Like, again, Porzingis is everything you want in a young star. He is, like, a relentless work ethic, great character, always in the gym, great teammate. His frustration at the end of the year is naturally because of the dysfunction all around the organization. And maybe he shouldn't have skipped the exit meeting. Maybe he should have went in and talked to them about it. But as an organization, you've got to go reach out to this player and talk and not make a rash decision of moving him. I think that Jackson, if he were to take Markkanen at 8, he would use Porzingis to, among other assets, get an elite level point guard. But there's no way you're getting value or trade value for a 21-year-old player as unique as him. It doesn't make any sense, and everybody in the league is baffled by how Phil Jackson is not only running this team but now handling this situation. Because even if they don't trade him, Jim, you are further distancing yourself from a player who wants nothing more than to be a star in New York. And there aren't many stars in the NBA right now lining up to want to come play for the Knicks, and you've got one, and you're pushing him away.
Even for Phil, it makes no sense whatsoever. You can't get equal value for a guy when there's no other guy like him. All right, so we got about a minute left. We're 2 days away from the draft, which has practically become Woj Day, where you beat everybody to every scoop that's out there. Adrian, what kind of coverage will you be doing with the Vertical this year?
Well, we had this group together last year. You know, we're going to have the picks first, the trades first, hopefully. And having in our studio Tom Crean, the former Indiana coach, who is, and Draft Express, the foremost draft authority on the league, just tremendous insight, analysis on every pick, and context about why teams are making decisions. And then we'll be on site at the draft with breaking news, with the picks. Chris Mannix is hosting the show. And I just think if you love the draft, if you love this time of year, that everything you want in a 3-4 hour production is in our show, and you'll get it first. And and just tremendous insight from a group I'm really proud to be around.
Eric Hosmer is my guest. You had a two-run bomb last night to left center in the third inning. When you saw the pitch, exactly what did you see, and how did it feel when you made contact? Did you know, Eric, that one was gone?
Yeah, you know, there's very few times where you know in Kansas City that you got a ball, but just a fastball changeup guy, just, you know, his changeup was only a couple, you know, miles per hour slower than his heater, and, you know, I think it was one that he left up and just saw good and early and put a good swing on it, and it got us on the board.
There you go. You know, it's such a long year, Eric. The team got off to kind of a slow start, but then you came right back on a road trip where you went 7-2. You've won 8 of your last 9 games now. So what changed for the team?
Well, I tell you what, that's the thing about baseball is it's such a long season, and I think just overall you got to have confidence in your group and confidence in the guys. And, you know, we're a team that's tested. We're a team that's been there before. We've won. So I think we never lost confidence in each other to go on a run like this. And, you know, especially the way our division's shaping up, it's still up for grabs right now. You know, I think any team can really, you know, grab the division and really run with it. So we still feel like we're in the thick of things. And really, the season's just getting started now.
Yeah, Eric, in terms of that, you took me right to my next question. I was going to say, you're just 3.5 games out of first, despite the fact that you're without my guy, Danny Duffy. So does it feel like this is a group that can make another run this year?
Yeah, and that's the way we kind of, you know, the guy going tonight for us, Strom, he came out, first career start, and was lights out in L.A. He's done a great job out of the bullpen for us. So we feel the way we're going, and we add Strom to the mix, and then we get Duffy back. That's a big bolster to our staff. And, you know, of course, we got Ian Kennedy and Hamill that are veteran guys. So we definitely feel good about our team, and especially the way things are shaping up as of late.
Eric Hosmer joining us. And then, Eric, what you have is reliever Peter Moylan, and what he has to bring to it. And what he has to bring to it is an espresso machine. And the machine is getting a lot of credit and a lot of run for playing a role in turning around the season. First off, what is Moylan like as a barista?
Oh, I tell you what. Well, he's got a coffee shop down there in Australia where he's from. So he got some stuff imported out there. And his nickname is Sledge, the Sledge on the team. So he's making everybody what we call the Sledgiato before the game. It's his version of the Macchiato Latte deal. But I tell you what, we always find something each year to run with, and I guess the Sledgiato is what we're going with this year.
That's it, man. I love that. You guys do run with something every single year. And for those who don't know, let's be clear about this. For instance, Whit Merrifield had a cup of the coffee. He goes on a 19-game hitting streak. Alex Gordon has gone from rarely drinking coffee to buying a machine to bring on the road. So is there magic in the espresso machine? And if so, how do you explain it?
I don't know. There really is, though. I tell you what, this last road trip, he would bring one to Kane and dugout, and Kane obviously had the road trip he had with a bunch of homers and all that. So I saw him last night, and I told him, hey, I like homers too, so don't be afraid to get me one of those things. And sure enough, I had one waiting for me in the cage before the game, and I told Kane, wait till Sledge comes in the locker room after the game. He's going to be fired up, and sure enough, he came running right over our lockers, was pumped up, so I guess we're running with this thing now.
Yeah, let me tell you, it's the first call I'm going to make as soon as this show's over. I need one, too. Eric Hosmer joining us. Eric, you were the MVP of last year's All-Star Game, and you've taken over the lead in voting for AL first baseman this year. Of course, next month's All-Star Game is in Miami. You're a South Florida guy. What would it mean to you to be an All-Star again this season?
It would mean a lot. You know, obviously, going back home to Miami, I grew up you know, not watching games at that stadium, but watching games in that area and, of course, watching the Marlins. So it'd be a tremendous honor. And you know, the biggest thing is the fans vote. So to get the acknowledgement from the fans would mean a lot to me. But, you know, there's a lot of great first basemen out there. There's a lot of guys having great years, a lot of guys having breakout years. So either way it shakes up, I'm glad to get off to the start I am. And at the end of the day, you know, that stuff is a tremendous honor. It's a lot of fun. But we're trying to win ball games at the end of the day, and the way our team's rolling as of late, you know, I'll take that over anything.
Eric Hosmer, Kansas City Royal, joining us. You know, in addition to all that, Eric, you're a member of Team USA's World Baseball Classic winning team and also a member of the All-Classic team. What was that entire experience like for you?
That experience was unbelievable. I think, you know, it's, especially during spring training there, that time frame, you're supposed to just be getting ready to go, try and get your body in shape, and basically be ready to take on 162. And this year was a little different. It was a little different for all of us in the off season. You know, I think we went home, you know, you chill for about a week or two and you just kind of turn it right on and get ready to go because you got to crank it up so early. And just a good group of guys, man. Jim Leland, I mean, you can't get a better manager first off when you're talking about Jim Leland. And I think they got the right guys, you know, the guys like Ian Kinsler and Arenado and Yelich that, you know, are not only superstars in this game, but, I mean, these guys are grinders. These guys come to the field ready every day. And as far as competing, I think they got the right group of competitors, that's for sure.
You know, I wonder, you had the go-ahead two-run homer in the bottom of the eighth in a tied game against Venezuela. Now, you're a World Series champion. You've played in the most intense, pressure-packed moments that there are in baseball anywhere. So how does the atmosphere of the WBC compare to some of those other moments you've been in?
Well, I tell you what, the atmosphere is right there. It's same type of atmosphere. When you throw the international flavor in there, it gets the crowd going. You know, when we were down there in Miami, that game against the Dominican Republic, I don't think I've been in a louder stadium since the World Series. But obviously, the World Series is a lot more to play for. But you know, when you represent your country, it's a big deal, and that's the way it kind of started out for us. You know, we wanted to treat it as the USA, be professional about it and take home the gold. And then, you know, before you know it, guys are going crazy when they hit home runs, showing a lot more emotions. And before the thing was over with, we were getting fired up ourselves and showed a lot more emotion towards the end. So it was just a great tournament. I think it was a great event for baseball. And you got to see a lot of the countries do good things. You know, a lot of good things happen in Puerto Rico because of how far they made it. So just a great thing for the game, and I was glad to be a part of it.
Eric Hosmer joining us. Eric, one more thought before you go. Earlier this month, your former teammate, Edinson Volquez, threw a no-hitter for the Marlins, and that would have been on your Donald Ventura's 26th birthday. What kind of emotions did you have when you saw that?
So many emotions. You know, I think the biggest thing it made me realize was how fortunate and how lucky I am to be a part of the group I am that won in Kansas City, because you know, we were all floating text messages in a group deal there. And, you know, just the brotherhood and the bond that we've created throughout the years here with that team, it's just, it means so much to be a part of. And it really touched a lot of us that day. It's crazy how this game works and how life works, honestly. And to do it in Miami, obviously there with Jose, and to do it on Ace's birthday, it was just, and of all people to do it, Volquez, you know, he really looked out for this kid. And he was like a father figure to him, man. He really was. So just special how some things turn out. And a lot of us are convinced that that was a lot more than just a coincidence.
This guy wants to take a shot. Let's go to New Mexico. Travis in New Mexico. It's good to have you, Travis. How are you?
Thanks, Roman, for the vine. Look, let's be honest, man, Smack. Smack Off is the greatest event in radio. Not day, not show, but event. In regards to the Smack Off field, I don't think we're going to be hearing from Mark in Hollywood this year, considering he's responsible for The Bachelor in Paradise being shut down. And it was really nice of Shale to squeeze in a phone call while preparing to fight Silva. Hey, Shale, what's your workout plan? Alternating between Kegel exercises and syringes? Shale, you spend all year writing smack, and the best you can come up with is some resurrection gimmick? You spend all year, 364 days, writing smack, and the best you can come up with is an eighth-place finish last year? Do yourself a favor, put down the pen, and stick to what you're good at, disappointing hard-working pay-per-view customers. The only thing coming in hot is your urine sample. Apparently, Mike in Indy is a favorite this year again. For the life of me, I can't understand why. Mike in Indy is like Scottie Pippen. Never won a championship without Jordan. Mike, the Undertaker called. He wants his gimmick back. But unlike Mike, the Undertaker actually won something riding solo. And you know Mike is insecure about his, quote, wins, because he literally justifies it in every call. And for some reason, Zach and Salt Lake won a golden ticket. Let's hope he doesn't mistake his golden ticket for a pack of zigzags and miss his opportunity to get that participation shout-out he's setting himself up with. War, smack, and only smack, winning 2017. I'm out.
It's not bad, Travis. It's not bad. In fact, I'll rack the call. At Rich in the 970, he tweets, tell Chael if he'd focus on his fighting as much as his weak smack game, he'd be a much better fighter. Yeah, I don't know, Rich. Weak smack? I mean, are we talking about the same guy here? The 2012 Smack Off champ. You mean that guy with weak smack? The guy who won the Smack Off? I mean, a guy that I could literally just close my eyes and pull anything from his library of smack.
and then come up with something like this.
Tito, go ahead. Tell him what I do so well.
Well, he talks well. His mouth has gotten him every fight, big fight that he's had.
Tito always says I'm using my mouth to get my opportunities. The only person I know that made money using their mouth is his ex-wife.
Oh!
Well, just to correct you, I was never no marriage.
Uh-oh.
You're a f***ing punk, dude. That's what you call class right here compared to no class.
That was a nasty line.
No
by
class.
Me.
No class at all. That's why you see him with thongs and f***ing jeans and a t-shirt. No class.
They don't call you the bad guy for nothing.
A bad girl.
Uh-oh! Hey, say what you want about Chael. Say what you want about his last fight. Say what you want about his fighting career. The one thing you cannot say about Chael is that he can't run smack. Clones, thank you very much for listening. Now do what you always do and trust the podcast. Plus, check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. We'll give it to you then. See ya.
Kaboom.